One of my favorite things to do when I was growing up was play catch with my brother. He was 2 years older than me, and he and I would get into interesting games of pepper. If you've ever played catch, pepper is just throw it as fast and quick as you can, and you just go back and forth and have a good time with it. And we were pretty compatible playing that game. One early Saturday morning, we were out playing pepper, and we lived in the Bay Area, close enough to the bay for the morning sort of marine layer to lay down some moisture and make things a little bit wet. And on this particular morning, I remember playing pepper with my brother, and our neighbor was out mowing her lawn. Power mowers in those days were different than today in that they did not have the safety catch where you today grab the handle and pull a little second handle. And as long as those two are held in a grip, the mower keeps going and the blade keeps spinning. But if you were to release it, it stops everything, shuts it down. Well, we as I said, we lived in the Bay Area in the 60s and before they thought of safety things like that. And we're busy having fun. And somewhere along the way, I happened to look up and notice that she had left the mower and had begun to run toward the street. In front of her house, and she was running hysterically in her front yard. It was impossible to hear because of the sound of the lawnmower. But as she made her way closer and closer to the street where we were playing pepper, I could see not only was she hysterical, but there's the color of red beginning to cover her clothes and her arm and such. And she lunged at a car as it passed and stopped abruptly in front of her and just sort of threw herself on the hood of this car, as I recall. And at that moment, the person, horrified inside, opened the door, and she quickly got in, and it sped off, presumably to the hospital. It was later that morning, a few minutes later, her son came out and shut off the mower. A few hours later, my brother and I are kind of stunned what just happened, couldn't quite make sense of it, nor could her son, who didn't have a chance to piece it all together, but he was back later that morning, and we noticed him. He was a friend of ours, a teenager. We were maybe 7 and 9, and we went out and said hello, and we noticed him looking down at the grass and walking slowly, and he had a baggie with some ice, and he said, my mother slipped and fell, and her hand went under the mower deck this morning, and can you help us look for her severed fingers. And we're like, oh, okay. This all of a sudden got real icky real fast. It was a terrible moment. And we began to look, and sure enough, we found one. And it was nearly a full finger. I remember looking at that, and you, like me, are not used to seeing severed appendages. You're not used to it. And to see an index finger laying in the grass instead of connected to someone's hand, it's like out there. What do you do with that? And of course, he picked it up and put it in the bag. And as he did, we could not only notice it was a finger, but we noticed as well that it was already very lifeless. It was, in fact, grayish in color. Now, I've grossed you out. I apologize. Okay. But I want you to look down at your hand for a minute. So since we're all thinking and getting clammy and so on in our hands, look down. We all have, most of us have all 10 digits attached, right? We have, I was making a count of them. We used to call it thumbkin, pointer, tall man, ring finger, and pinky, right? So, and if you and I were to think through what we could do with our hands and what, in fact, we do with our hands. I see some of you right now, kind of doing different things with your hands. I saw someone a minute ago scratch their head, and somebody a cheek. And sometimes ladies will make their hair go back, running it through their fingers. I see some youth over here going like this right now and using their hands inappropriately. But anyway, we could talk about all the different things that we do with our hands, with our fingers. And that all works fine as long as they remain vitally connected. I could ask Doc Farrell to come up here and explain all that goes into keeping this index finger working well. But I presume it to be, obviously, flesh and bone and ligaments and nerves and veins. Am I doing okay, Doc? A few other things along the way. It all works together so that my fingers are an advantage. They are an asset and useful. But once they are severed, it completely loses its usefulness to me. John, in his gospel, wrote about fingers. But he doesn't ever use the word finger in his explanation. He uses something that's a whole lot more pleasant to talk about. But nonetheless, necessarily involves a vital connection. You see on the screen a picture of a grapevine and fruit, grapes. And that's the metaphor, the allegory that I want you and I to look at today in God's Word, because I think it'll come alive for you, even if you've read it a number of times before and know exactly what it's about to say. I think with what the Holy Spirit's going to teach you this morning, you're going to go away not just appreciating the vital connection that all your fingers have to make them useful to you, but the vital connection that you and I must have to Him in order for us to be fruitful and of benefit to Him in His kingdom. So if you haven't turned to John 15 already, I'd like you to look up John chapter 15. It's the fourth gospel. It's on page 764, where Jesus tells this allegory of a vineyard, explaining how He wants to work in our lives and to bear fruit and bring us to maturity. Now, Jesus, I need to set establish sort of the setting here. Jesus, as they say in the South, was fixing to leave. Okay? He's about to leave them, and some of you who know John's gospel, you know that from chapter 13 to chapter 17, Jesus is spending these final hours, the night before He was arrested, indeed the very night He's arrested, He spends it with His closest 11 friends. One has already turned and abandoned Him. His name's Judas. And in this, the middle section of that upper room conversation, we find our way to John chapter 15, where He's saying some things as He announces to His men, "I'm about to leave." But he says, notice back in chapter 14, and I think it's verse 18, if you look at 14:18, He says, "Guys, I'm going to leave, but I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. Before long, the world will not see me anymore, but you will see me." You know what He's talking about there? I'm going to leave. In fact, that night, He left. I'm going to go away. And He died that night and early the next morning, gave His life, was resurrected 3 days later, lived approximately 40 more days on earth before their very eyes, He ascended back to the Father, and that was it. So how could John 14, verse 18, be true? Somebody? I'm not going to leave you as orphans. How am I going to grow you? The Holy Spirit, He's going to come and He's going to live inside of you. And He's going to produce something of your life that could not be produced without Him. So now, John 15. "I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, He prunes so that it'll be even more fruitful. You're already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, and you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be given you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. Jesus was explaining his plan to mature his disciples and to make them fruitful. Which leads to big idea number one that's on the screen. There are no quick ways to grow up or to bear fruit. None. I know this is a hard swallow for some already. And I know that because I live in the same world you live in. We live in a world that is conditioned to fast-paced. We are people who live our lives by sound bite speed. It's get it done and get it done now. We're products of a culture that say things like, I hate to wait, I will not wait, and if I'm forced to wait, I will go someplace else. It's why there's a panic in what you call it, banks or grocery stores. They got signs that say, we'll give you 5 minutes if you wait for 3 minutes. Or $5 if you have to wait for 3 minutes. What kind of craziness is that? Well, it's just part of our culture. In fact, I got to tell you, last night, Debbie and I and a couple of our children joined us for this. We were just kind of clicking through the channels, and we came on AMC, American Movie Cinema, Classics. And anybody watch last night what was on? I don't mean the... What was the thing called? Psycho? No, not that one, trust me. But Alfred Hitchcock had the movie The Birds on last night. Huh? All right, baby. Okay, for some of you that missed it, or if you're youth, younger than 40, you probably have never heard. The rest, have you seen it? Did you like it? Did it freak you out, or was it kind of... Really? Wow, you're unusual, because I'll tell you, Debbie and I are like, oh, kids, you're going to love this. And about halfway through, I'm looking at Debbie going, do you remember it being this slow? I mean, it was just, you know, there's blackbirds and there's seagulls, and then they, you know, they get together and they attack people and chase little kids at school and all this kind of stuff, you know. And it was like, we remember it. I remember it as a kid going, I mean, the next... as soon as you watched it that day, if you went outside and saw a bird, you're like, ah, you know, it's gonna get me, you know, and there wasn't even the drama music. You know how sometimes music is, they hit a violin chord and it's, you know, the tension as the lady's walking upstairs because she hears the fluttering of wings, and they've pretty much put a fortress around downstairs, but she hears this fluttering of wings and everybody's asleep and all, you know, cut up, pecked up by birds and stuff. She goes upstairs hearing this thing, and you know, she's getting closer and closer to the door, and it's all silent, and it just built and built. And our kids stayed to watch us, I think more for the entertainment of watching us, because they're kind of looking at it going, wow, that's not even close to Transformers, Dad. Not even anywhere near it. You know. All right. We're that kind of culture, though, aren't we? We want action. We want fast. And that makes us suckers. Suckers for shortcuts. Even for shortcuts to get the stuff we're reading about here. Give me the fruit, baby, but give me it when? Yesterday. Tired of waiting. Growth gimmicks is what I sometimes think of them as. What are they? Well, spiritually speaking, it's any time that there's this breakthrough book. Never before heard Bible study or tapes or teachings that promise a fast payoff. I wanted to find out if this is true or I'm just making it up. So I just browsed through my library this week. And I came across a book, and I'll spare you the author. It's not important. It was a good enough book to buy. But I now look at it a little differently. It's, Lord, teach me to pray in 28 days. Now, how many of you think that title is a grabber? It's a good one. Come on. Sure. Are you kidding? Sign me up. I'd love to know how to pray. In how many? 28 days? Ready? Go. Only Jesus took 3 years to teach his closest friends how to pray. 3 years. They watched him. They listened. What's he saying? They probably looked. Is he peeking or is his eyes closed? How does he pray? See? But when we fall for stuff like that, we're bending the rule. The rule of relationship presented by Jesus in John 15. I want us to look there and notice a second big idea. Here it is. Branches bear fruit because they're connected and they're corrected. That's how it happens. Let's get acquainted with a vineyard, because unless you're different than I am, I know Oregon's kind of coming into its own as a wine growing, a grape wine growing state. Did I say that right? I mean, there are vineyards all over the place. The one I think of is a really cool-looking one. There's a lot in Yamhill County and stuff, but down in Salem, south of Salem, you know the one off I-5 there? You get to see it, and it's real impressive, at least from the highway. I've never gone into it. But so we're free to say, and lots of the literature says Oregon's wine grape industry is equal to or better than Napa and blew by France a long time ago. Okay? Sure enough. I still don't know anything about grapes. I like grapes, my favorite fruit in the summer, but those are table grapes. So I got to digging, and I came across an article called Considerations for Starting a Vineyard. Thought it was a good place to begin, so check this out. Establishing a vineyard and bringing it to full production requires a large amount in money and labor. Development costs for the first 3 years can be somewhere between $9,000 and $15,000 an acre, not including land costs. That's a gob, all right? Vineyards are expensive, and grapevines require frequent, remember these words, frequent and intensive management, much of which is done manually, not with equipment. Count me out right there, okay? I love hedge trimmers. You don't use them in a vineyard, okay? I love Roundup. That's how you get rid of weeds, right? You'll kill your grapevines. Here's how it finished. Therefore, careful consideration should be taken of the financial and labor requirements before proceeding with plans for a vineyard. Okay, so I learned a little bit about vineyards. Jesus, in John 15, is using just such a picture. And counting the costs, he proceeds with a plan to produce fruit in his people, you and me. In this vineyard analogy, he points out several features. Look back at John 15 and let's make note of them. They're important features. First of all, the true vine. We're told in verse 1 that is Jesus. And that's important because there was much misunderstanding in Jesus' day over what constitutes a branch. There were people that said, hey, I'm a Jew. I'm a son of Abraham. I'm part of the nation of Israel. Are you kidding me? Does that speak vineyard or what? Does that talk the language of branch or what? If you want a further expose on this, go to John 8 sometime later today, and you'll see what I mean. It was all about that. The people saying, of course I'm in. I belong to the lineage and heritage. But Jesus is saying, not so. To be a branch and ultimately to bear fruit, a believer must be vitally connected to the true vine. Okay? That's the first thing that stands out. Here's the second thing. It has to do with branches. Well, branches are believer. Let's go back. Gardener. God. My Father is the gardener. Yeah, I'd skip forward to branches. My Father's the gardener. So what's a gardener do? Well, he plants. He fertilizes. We're going to see in a minute. He prunes. And he works the crop, in this case, the vineyard, so that it will ensure, he will ensure top production. That's what the gardener does. And we're told in verse 1, Jesus is the true vine, and God the Father is the gardener. Okay? Now, thirdly, branches. That's where believers come in. Verse 2, he cuts off every branch that does not bear fruit. While every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. So those are believers. When a person believes that no life is possible without a link to the true vine, you don't have it yet until you're linked to the true vine, Jesus Christ, then that person is made a branch by faith. Let me say it a different way so it sticks. If you're a Christian, you are known in this passage as a branch. If you are not a Christian, you are not a branch yet. You have to be grafted in. And that can happen to you this morning. Why wait? Okay, so we got God. Jesus is the true vine. God is the gardener. Christians are branches. And then there's one final feature here that he points to, and that's the fruit. What's fruit? It's Christian character. The natural abundance of that vital connection between a branch and the true vine. So I need to ask you something. If you're a Christian, that makes you a branch. If this whole passage is about bearing fruit, Christian character, how much fruit is seen in your life? I'm not in a position to answer that for you, nor would I. I think it's a good question for you to ask of yourself. Am I a branch? Am I connected to the vine, true vine? Is the gardener at work in my life to prune me, and some other things we'll understand in a minute? And if so, is there fruit? Is there fruit in my life? I don't know if you caught it as we read it, but there's a very interesting progression of this Christian character or fruit bearing. It starts in verse 2 with no fruit. Do you see how he begins there? He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. That's the beginning point, okay? You're not a branch, you've got no fruit. And then he goes from that to what's next? Still in verse 2, he takes it to, he goes from bearing no fruit, while every branch that bears fruit, so we go from no fruit to bearing fruit, and look still further in the same verse, so that he prunes it so that it will bear even, what? More fruit. So remember this now. We go from no fruit, a condition all of us begin in, no fruit, to bearing fruit, to bearing more fruit, but he's not done. Look down at verse 5. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear what? Much fruit, no fruit, fruit, more fruit, a gob, a whole bunch of fruit. So let me ask you again, what condition, what kind of fruit, and what quantity of fruit is happening? How much fruit is being produced in your life? No fruit, a little bit of fruit, more fruit, much fruit. That's what we're supposed to think about. There was a pastor of Moody Bible Church, Harry Ironside. Love the guy's first and last name. But check out his words, because he's talking about, well, Galatians 5. It's the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace. Listen to how he puts it, though. If the fruit isn't present, then you may be sure of this, that even though you may have trusted Christ for your salvation, you are not living in fellowship with God. Swallow hard, folks. I think that's truth. Okay? Then he breaks it down and lets us measure it. Because you remember the list in Galatians 5? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness. He breaks it down for us. If instead of love, good starting point, if instead of love, there is bitterness, malice, and unkindness. If instead of, second one was joy, there is gloom. If instead of peace, there is unrest. If instead of long-suffering, there's impatience. If instead of gentleness, there is harshness, he's not done. If instead of goodness, there is moral evil beginning to be manifest in your life. If instead of faith, there's worry and lack of confidence. If instead of the fruit in your life of meekness, pride, meekness, there's pride and haughtiness. If instead of self-control or temperance, you are subject to the lusts of the flesh. Listen to how he concludes it. That tells the story that no matter what you profess, you are not living in a vital connection of fellowship with God. So if you're taking inventory right now and going, you know, I'm way back at no fruit, Pastor Steve. That's me. What's happened to the vital connection? This isn't about you bearing fruit. This is about you connecting with the true vine, cooperating with the gardener so that he can bear fruit through your life. So are you living in fellowship with the vine? Based on the fruit of your life, how do you answer that? Is there an increasing quantity evidenced in you? Okay, if branches, that's you and I, are to bear fruit, then two conditions are mentioned for that to happen. I assume that to be your interest like it is mine. It's certainly a strong interest I have to bear much fruit. Here it is. We've got to stay connected. Did you notice it as we read this? Jesus uses a word, really an expression, 11 times. 11 times. What is it? What's the word? Abide or remain. The expression remain, abide in me. Remain in me. Stay connected to me. It's indispensable in fruit bearing. He gives you a couple of ways to do that. The first, of course, is his word, daily exposure to the light. All right? His word, that's what verse 3 is getting at. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken in you. He returns again to it. Remain in me. Abide in me. Drink up the exposure that your branch needs to get the stuff you need to bear fruit. You'll find it here. It's what will produce fruit in your life. But he's not finished. There's a second expression that he uses. Daily dialogue with the Lord through prayer. That's what verse 7, I love verse 7. If you remain, there it is again, in me, and my words remain in you, is this an offer or what? Ask whatever you wish, and it will be given to you. Folks, think of it in human terms. Take dialogue out of any human relationship. Parent and child, husband and wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, good friends with each other. You take dialogue out, which is what prayer is in this passage. You take that out, and you will not stay connected for very long. You certainly won't bear the fruit that says you're in this relationship. So we've got to stay connected to bear more fruit. One more condition. I want you to see this. It's the word I used earlier, stay corrected. Kind of an interesting way to put it, but it's truer to the original word here. Verse 3 reads, you're already clean. Wait a minute. Verse 2 reads, he cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he takes to the next level. How does he do that? Somebody call out the word. He prunes you. Pruning means to purify or to cleanse. To purify or cleanse. To remove the dead wood and to bring new life back to the branch. So pruning is the process where God removes sin, bad thoughts, bad behavior from my life so that he makes me, as a result of removing those things, more fruitful. That's what pruning, to cleanse, to purify. I love this about God. It's not how I garden, though. God is not random. God is highly precise. He does not own a hedge trimmer. I told you earlier, that's my favorite way to garden. I see Debbie out there with these very precise, I'm not sure what they're called, but they're clipper things. I don't even know where they are. Because I love, my only complaint is I got an electric hedge trimmer and I want a gas one with a big old long blade and I can just go after it, you know? It's my favorite kind. And if that doesn't work, get Roundup going and you got it all, right? Not God. God's approach is more my Debbie's approach to gardening. Let's take our time. Let's cut only what needs to be cut. Let's be precise here. Let's take the stuff away that's not bearing fruit so that what remains will do what? Oh, it'll look great. Remember that quote I said earlier, I had you look at earlier about the vineyard? Remember these words? Vineyards require frequent and intensive management. That's what we're reading about when we read the word he prunes. Pruning involves his word to convict us of sin. That's what Jesus said in John 16. It also involves people. God will use a brother or a sister in my life to rebuff me, to prune me. And I know that with certainty based on these words from Proverbs. Wounds from a friend can be trusted. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. A friend who has a purifying and cleansing effect in this branch by a well-chosen, precise word. You're messing up. Straighten up. And it'll happen that way for you, which is why we're urgent. We plead with you, get connected in small groups. You know, as I draw this together, let me have you return in your memory to the first big idea. Remember what it was? You can look at your outline. There's no quick ways to grow up or bear fruit. I mentioned that again at closing because my experience is that the moment the word pruning or correction is mentioned, the moment those words are heard, we look for other ways, typically. I don't like the sound of that. It's okay when we're talking about horticulture and grapevines. I don't like the sound of that in my own life. It doesn't feel good. And I'm pleading with you, don't do that. In verse 6, Jesus spoke of faithless branches, like Judas, who didn't stay connected and didn't accept correction and therefore don't have fruit. He described them in verse 6, if you look at it, as being cut off and thrown away and burned. You have any idea what he meant by that? What he meant, I'm not sure. To tell you with absolute certainty would be to fake it. But when he says, if anyone does not remain in me, he's like a branch that's thrown away and withers every branch. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. I'm not quite sure what that means, but I don't like any of the sound of that. if it pertains to me. That much I can tell you for sure. So take a look at your life. Are you bearing much fruit? Because as fingers don't function when severed, and branches don't bear fruit when they're removed from the vine, so too Christians will not grow up and will not bear fruit unless we stay vitally connected to the one true vine and cooperate with the gardener who prunes us in love to bear fruit. I'd like you to bow your heads if you would. And I'm going to ask you to pray a prayer with me this morning. If you are not a branch, you have never believed in Jesus Christ as the true vine, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to urge you, pray that prayer now. Come to Him in faith, believing that He is the true vine. And believe and love that He wants to make you a branch. He's not giving you an assignment, go bear enough fruit to impress me. He's saying, belong to me. Be in a vital, connected relationship with me through faith. And I'm going to lead you in prayer right now. Lord Jesus, I am not one of your branches, but you are the true vine. If you're not a branch, pray these words. I invite you to graft me in to you, the true vine. And I welcome you, God the gardener, to prune me, to cleanse me, to purify me, that I would bear much fruit. Make me one of your branches, for I know where else to turn. If you've prayed that prayer, you now are a branch connected to the vine, and you've heard enough information to get you started to grow in Him, to bear fruit for Him. But it's entirely possible that many are hearing my words this morning and look at this and find yourself coming up short. And for you, I'd like to ask you to follow me in prayer. Lord, I know the fruit in my life is less than you want. And I admit I have neglected your word and ignored a close connection with you through prayer. I've also steered clear of your people, and I've got all my reasons. I confess even now that I possess very little fruit because I have resisted your pruning of me. On this Sunday, Lord, forgive me. And I ask you to prune me. Lord, since I naturally flee from pain and give up, give me courage to cooperate with your pruning work in my life, come what may. And help me to stay connected to you. And as a result, grow up and bear fruit for your glory. For I ask this in the name of the true vine, Jesus Christ. Amen.